To get a closer look at the scope of the prescription opioid abuse problem, we visited with Dr. Richard Dart in Denver, Colorado. He's the executive director of the Researched Abuse Diversion and Addiction-Related Surveillance System, or RADARS, which tracks patterns of use, abuse, and misuse of prescription opioids throughout the U.S.
I started my career in emergency medicine, and during my emergency medicine years, I got interested in medical toxicology and became a clinical toxicologist. As an emergency physician, I'd always been aware that prescription drug abuse was a problem. 20 years ago, the patient seeking prescription opioids were not infrequent, but they weren't common. Over the subsequent 20 years, it's increased dramatically. I don't think most people understand how prevalent the abuse of prescription opioids is in our society, and that it's actually still worsening.
I'll order some acetylcysteine for her.
I was lucky to become the director of a poison center, the Rocky Mountain Poison and Drug Center. It's stunning how many calls come to poison centers regarding the opioids.
The amount that you had used from the bottle was how many?
I'm gonna observe her probably for about 4 hours on a cardiac monitor.
I became more aware about prescription drug abuse on the RADARS project in 2002. The RADARS system was started to look at drug abuse as a mosaic. There's many different pieces to it. And so RADARS has many different pieces that look at each of the facets of drug abuse. For example, we look at periods when the patient has to expose themselves to the healthcare system. We have poison centers that report on drug abuse. We get patients or abusers when they go for substance abuse treatment.
We've also had some addiction issues for a while.
Another part is law enforcement. If you are arrested for prescription drug abuse, then that data is forwarded to the RADARS system. And then finally, college students fill out an online survey and describe anonymously their prescription drug abuse. So this gives us many different views on prescription drug abuse. I think the most surprising finding for me personally is that prescription opioid abuse affects everybody. The RADARS system has data collection from 94% of the three-digit zip codes in the United States. And of those, 97% report prescription opioid abuse. It's startling. It's everywhere, geographically in every part of the country, but also, I would point out, in every socioeconomic group. The point of RADARS is to provide information in a time frame that actually can lead to intervention. The most common opioid drug that we find in our surveillance is the hydrocodone-acetaminophen combinations. And that would be followed by the oxycodone-acetaminophen combinations. Depending on the number of people who have a prescription for that drug, the number one drug becomes methadone. The main implication of these findings for physicians who treat chronic pain is that they need to have a system for evaluating their patients. One tool that physicians can use are the prescription monitoring plans in each state. And that information can be used by a physician to see whether or not their patients are abusing the system.
Any questions about your
medication? No, I've been on it for a while.
The research on prescription opioid abuse is helping already to reduce, or at least try to reduce, abuse by describing where the abuse occurs, by showing that it occurs everywhere and in all groups, so that physicians understand that it isn't just a certain part of the population they have to worry about.
Thank you.
In response to this abuse problem, several manufacturers are developing abuse deterrent formulations. And in fact, some of these have been approved by the FDA and are now entering the market.
744.
One thing that's clear from the research is that it's very difficult to identify patients who are misusing, abusing, diverting their prescription opioids. We are the gatekeepers of the prescription opioids. We need to be careful about who we prescribe them to and how much we prescribe so that we can control the amount of drug available in the society.
Yeah, this is an interesting little snippet here about the RADARS system and how they've detected hydrocodone-containing products and then oxycodone-containing products. And that would be understandable. Hydrocodone products are the number one prescribed drugs in the United States right now. So finding a drug that is abusable and having it readily available for legitimate reasons, you would expect some of it to be getting out into the public and have it be abused. But an interesting fact was that methadone was high on that list. It is not being prescribed very much, but it also has a high incidence of radar hits. And that's interesting because we in primary care are getting pushed to use methadone. It's not only a good drug for a variety of reasons, it's a cheap drug, so there's a lot of pressure on us to use it. Yet at the same time, there are these risks, and certainly radar shows the risks as well.
It is an important point, and I think everyone needs to understand that methadone has some unique properties that are associated with it that that can lead to significant harm, unintentional overdose deaths. Of all of the deaths associated with methadone, and there are a large number, and one-third of those deaths are occurring in the first 10 days of the first prescription of methadone, and clearly methadone is associated with far more harm per prescription, per individual, than all of the other opioids by almost tenfold.
So obviously there are some misconceptions about the rate of addiction, and specifically among patients who are being managed with opioid therapy for their pain. Let's talk about addiction versus abuse.
Well, addiction has been, I think, overblown to some degree. That is the prevalence of it. Addiction occurs. And it probably occurs at a rate of about 2 to 5% of patients who are prescribed chronic opioid therapy. In the general population, opioid addiction is about 1 to 2%. So it's a little bit higher, naturally, but we also know that there are a lot of patients in methadone treatment centers who have chronic pain. And so there may be some crossover risk here, but it is not as prevalent as most people think. Abuse, that's another issue. You know, we think of about 20% of the patients, one out of five, who may use an opioid for a non-intended purpose. And it could be to get high, but it could be to treat a comorbid medical condition. Many of those patients, though, have legitimate pain problems, too. And so we're trying to treat what I call the atrial diagnosis, somebody with a mental health diagnosis, somebody with chronic pain, and somebody with a substance abuse problem. That becomes a real challenge. So it occurs, but addiction is not as prevalent as most people think. Abuse is a significant issue which we have to watch for.
I come from a bucolic state, the state of New Hampshire. It is the safest state in the United States in which to live. And yet it is one of the top five states identified by the radar database as having problems with prescription opioid diversion. Without somebody looking at this data, I would never know that that's the case. And so I think this database is extremely useful. It helps to alert me to the fact that even though I live in this safe, you know, state where people don't lock their doors and where you would never think that our kids were abusing these drugs, they are abusing these drugs at a higher rate than in almost any place else in the United States.
A real troubling, for me, a concept that people, especially doctors and patients, don't understand is the tolerance, physical dependence, and addiction difference. Now, tolerance means you take a drug, and after a while, you need more of the drug to have the same effect. So two hydrocodones work, and now you need four to have it work to treat the pain identically. That's tolerance. People develop tolerance commonly with the opioids. It's expected. That does not mean addiction. Physical dependence. Patients takes a drug, runs out of the drug, the doctor's out of town, they don't call in time, they run out over a weekend, for example, and they have nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, they don't sleep real well, and they say, oh, I was addicted. I hear this all the time. I was just addicted to that stuff because, doc, when you weren't there, I didn't get it. And that isn't addiction either. That's physical dependence, which is shown with an abstinence syndrome if you stop the drug abruptly. Addiction is not either one of those. Addiction is a behavioral syndrome that is genetic, that's socioeconomic in nature. It has a variety of mechanisms, but it's defined by, in my mind, use despite harm. Use despite harm. So it's continuing to use a substance even though you know you're harming yourself. And that's the way we define it. It's not defined the other way. And that's why it's so important that the doctor and the patient know the differences in these terms.
How might physicians who decide to manage patients with chronic pain identify individuals who might be at risk for aberrant behavior?
There are many guidelines available now. in the United States, Australian guidelines, guidelines from the United Kingdom, et cetera. The Federation of State Boards of Medicine has published guidelines which have been distributed to many physicians throughout the United States. What you need to do is you need to understand what your state guidelines are before you start prescribing these drugs, and you need to be a good doctor. To a large extent, that's what you need to do. You need to examine your patient. You need to conduct a complete physical examination, get a social history, get a family history. If it's a patient that comes from another doctor who was already prescribed opioids, you need to contact that doctor and get records from that doctor and have a conversation with that doctor so you'll understand what that patient's history is. You need to do an assessment. You need to do a risk assessment. You need to discuss benefits. As I've already discussed, you need to have your patient understand that treatment is going to be a trial, and continued treatment is going to be contingent upon seeing some improvement, improvement in function, improvement in reduction in pain, improvement in mood. And you have to understand that it is an ongoing patient care situation, and you need to see your patient frequently over the course of your relationship with that patient and continually assess the suitability of those drugs.
These are guidelines, and we need to understand, but before we even get to that point, we ought to assess whether or not a patient is a moderate, low, or high-risk individual. And there are tools available for us to use. I developed a tool called the ORT. And it's a very simple tool that we can administer at the beginning of seeing somebody in our practice. And it'll stratify patients into low, moderate, and high risk groups, which help us at least initiate therapy. Because if it's somebody that's in the high risk group, you really should be somebody that has the skills to treat addiction, because that's what that category is most likely to predict. So we should stratify our patients using some kind of a tool like the ORT or the SOAP. And once after we're seeing the patients, along with what Gil has just talked about, we may want to be using other tools to help diagnose whether or not they have a substance abuse problem or misusing. And there's a common tool called the COM, and these will be available for, I think, the viewers here later. They can access these. And they're very short tools that can help with the diagnosis. It's a way to document in your chart that you're doing the right job of monitoring and assessing your patients.
What has your experience taught you about approaching risk assessment in the primary care setting?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to realize practically that we don't have a whole lot of time. Patients come in with a variety of medical complaints. Pain is just one of them. And to assume that we'll do a full, complete risk assessment when patients present with pain before we start an opioid probably is not realistic in our setting. Maybe we should do it, but we just don't have time to do it appropriately. What we do have, though, is a longitudinal experience with patients. So we develop information and skills of knowing who this patient is over a long period of time, because we see how they react to stresses in their life, a death of a loved one, somebody going away to college in an empty nest. That's how we develop our skills in primary care.
What other issues or evaluations should clinicians be aware of when they're assessing someone who's a potential candidate for opioid therapy?
I think that it's contingent upon any physician prescribing opioids, especially for chronic pain, to understand their patient's medical conditions, whether or not they have diabetes or whether or not they have high blood pressure. It's also extremely important to do a psychological evaluation. Make sure your patient's not depressed. Make sure that your patient doesn't have bipolar disorder or some other mental illness that may complicate your treatment with opioids, or may need to be treated prior to treatment with opioids and may obviate the need for treatment with opioids altogether. And lastly, you need to do a substance abuse assessment. And all the things that both Dr. McCarberg and Dr. Webster have been speaking about all along, patients who are at higher risk, who smoke cigarettes, who have a family history of substance abuse, who have a personal history of substance abuse, who are in certain age categories, who have comorbid psychiatric problems. These are all folks that we need to identify beforehand, and in order to treat the right disease. We want to make sure that we're treating addiction when addiction is the disease and treating pain when pain is the disease.